Why are we doing this? Why are we preparing for Pesach in this way? There are a lot of ways that we prepare for Pesach, that we have to prepare for Pesach. A lot of ways that we've put on upon ourselves to prepare for Pesach. You have cleaning for Pesach, you have cooking for Pesach, you have Mechiras Chametz, all sorts of different things. And here we are, having a Haggadah marathon to prepare for Pesach. And perhaps you would say, of course, it's obvious that we have to do this. But most of us, in a week and a half from now, will be sitting around a table with a group of children. Many of us will have some children at our table. Yeshiva students, maybe seminary students, maybe yeshiva bachurim, and they'll have a lot of Torah to share. They'll have learned numerous divrei Torah, they'll have plenty of material, and so a lot of times when we're running our siddurim, it's a little bit of a question of, well, what am I really here to contribute? Because the kids have so much to say. And so perhaps you might be tempted to think that the reason why we have a Haggadah marathon is so that we can compete. So that the kids have so much to say, so that we have a couple things also, so you'll hear 4, 5, 6 divrei Torah, and they have 25, 30 divrei Torah, and at least you'll have something to compete with the kids, so that you'll have something to say as well. But I think that would not be a good enough reason to have a Haggadah marathon. And I'd like to suggest that perhaps our role is a little bit more fundamental than just to compete with the children's Divrei Torah. And perhaps the Haggadah marathon is the perfect thing to put us in the right mindset to fulfill our own role at the Seder. With all of the Divrei Torah, the litany of Divrei Torah that the children come in to the Seder with Bizman Hazeh, which is a beautiful thing, it's easy to get lost in the forest. The Haggadah is very long. And the more Divrei Torah that you have, well, in a way, the easier it is to get lost. Because you're delving in, and that's kind of the way that the Haggadah is designed to begin with, to delve in and further and further and further. Hamarba Reza Meshubach, the one who goes further in is praiseworthy. But perhaps while we're going further in, there's also a counterbalance that's necessary to recognize what we're doing here, what the point of the Seder is, why it is that we're sitting around this table. And it's not just to say another Divrei Torah, another Divrei Torah, another Divrei Torah, but there's something broader that we're trying to accomplish. And I'd like to suggest, by way of absolutely no novelty whatsoever, the main reason why we're at the Seder. And I think we all know the main reason why we're at the Seder. What's the main reason why we're at the Seder? The main reason. Don't think too hard. The first thing that comes to mind. Sorry? V'higadeta levincha, to tell our children, so that what? In order for what? What? Tell our children, in order for what? For what to happen? If you take a look at the Haggadah, where it mentions those words, v'higadeta levincha, it gives you a reason. It says, b'chol dor v'ador, in every generation, chayav adam liros es atzmo, everyone is obligated to see themselves as if they left Egypt. So you would say the main goal of the Seder is to see yourself as if you've left Egypt. Yeah? We're all on the same page? That's the goal? So here's my follow-up question. Why? What's so important about seeing yourself as if you left Egypt? For what reason are we meant to see ourselves as if we've left Egypt? So I'd like to suggest perhaps there are three reasons why we're meant to see ourselves as if we've left Egypt. Three reasons. And it comes from the pasuk. Because if you keep going, if you say that if you note in the Haggadah where it says that we're obligated to see ourselves as if we left Egypt, the next words in the Haggadah are shene'emar. It brings a proof. And the proof is exactly the pasuk that Avi quoted, v'higadeta levincha bayom ahu lemor. You should say to your children on that day, saying, ba'avur zeh, Asa Adonai Li Bitsesi Mi Mitzrayim. And I'd like to break this up into three parts, and it'll correlate to those three ideas. Ba'avur Zeh, for the sake of this, Asa Hashem Li Bitsesi Mi Mitzrayim. Three clauses, three phrases. For the sake of this, Hashem did for me when we were leaving Egypt. And perhaps each of these reasons correlate to a different reason why we need to remember that Hashem took us out of Egypt. Let's go in reverse order. The first one, and perhaps the most obvious, is Bitsesi Mi Mitzrayim. Hashem took me out of Egypt. The person who's saying this is the father, is the parent, is each one of us at the Seder. We're the ones who are saying this. Bitzei si mi Mitzrayim, when Hashem took me out of Egypt. Bitzei si mi Mitzrayim, Hashem took me out of Egypt. The first reason why we need to have the Haggadah and see ourselves as if we left Egypt is so that we can feel Hashem in our lives, in our own personal experience. To feel like Hashem took me out of Egypt. And so Hashem must be with me. Hashem was with Bnei Yisrael when he took them out of Egypt. Bitzei Shem mi Mitzrayim. And so he's with me. Because Bitzei Si mi Mitzrayim. So the first reason why we read the Haggadah is so that we remember that Hashem is not just with them, but with me as well. The second reason is that chosenness is a difficult concept. It's hard to grapple with what it means to be chosen. How do we relate to being chosen, especially in the 21st century, but really ever? So much of anti-Semitism is based on a confrontation on that idea of being chosen, and it challenges us to think, how do I contemplate my own chosenness? Says the Haggadah, Asa Hashem li. Hashem did it for me. The context, the framework by which I approach chosenness is that Hashem did it to me. I didn't choose to be chosen. Hashem chose me to be chosen. That framework is a difficult framework to integrate into ourselves. But we see ourselves as if we left Egypt to understand, to remember, to reflect on the notion that Hashem did this for me. Come in, come in. And third, Ba'avur zeh, for the sake of this. And to accentuate this point, I'd like to turn to an earlier section of the Haggadah, where the Haggadah contemplates that perhaps the best day for beginning the Seder is actually not the first night of Pesach, but perhaps 2 weeks earlier on Rosh Chodesh. And it says, the Haggadah says, Yachol mei Rosh Chodesh, that maybe we should start from Rosh Chodesh. Talmud Lomar, because it says, Bayom Hahu. On that day, Hashem spoke to Moshe, gave him a whole list of obligations that the Jewish people would have to do, both in Egypt and going forward for generations, as preparation for experiencing Yetzias Mitzrayim. And then, Bayom Hahu, we should speak about it. On that day, we should speak about it. So perhaps that day is the day that Hashem spoke to Moshe on Rosh Chodesh. I bayom hahu, says the Gemara, says rather the Haggadah, if it's on that day, yachol mi ba'od yom, maybe it's Rosh Chodesh, Talmud Lomar, ba'avur zeh. The Pasuk says, ba'avur zeh, for the sake of this. So what does that mean, ba'avur zeh? So explains the Haggadah, ela b'shah sheyesh matzah umaror munachim lefanach. What is ba'avur zeh for the sake of this? Says the Haggadah very clearly, ba'avur zeh is when you have matzah and maror in front of you. So we have three clauses in the pasuk, the core of what it is that we are doing, v'higadita levincha, teaching our children. What are we teaching them? Ba'avur zeh, asa Hashem li, b'tzeisi mimitzrayim. We've explained b'tzeisi mimitzrayim, we need to feel like Hashem is with us. We've explained asa Hashem li, it's a framework for how we understand being chosen. But what is ba'avur zeh, having matzah and maror in front of us? Perhaps it's a way to look at mitzvos. Mitzvos can feel routine, especially over the course of the year. It's very easy to feel like mitzvos are routine. We do the same thing every day, we do the same thing every day, we do the same thing every day. Comes the Seder and says, we're not going to do the same thing today. We're going to put the same elements that you experienced that were meaningful for you in your exodus from Egypt, and perhaps the most meaningful communal experience we ever had, you take that meaning and you put it into, you infuse it into the things that are on your table to remind us that each one of the mitzvos that we do throughout the year are just as meaningful as the matzah and maror on the table. Lest we forget how meaningful the mitzvot really are. Ba'avur zeh, for the sake of remembering the meaning of the mitzvos, asa Hashem li, Hashem gives us the framework of what it means to be chosen. Bitzeisi mi Mitzrayim, that he's still with me. Bitzeisi mi Mitzrayim, because he took me out of Egypt. And so that's perhaps a framework for understanding our role in the Haggadah, our job to make sure that our children walk away with those broad strokes, those ideas. Everyone at our Seder walks away with those ideas. And we turn around from that experience and we say, thank you. And that's the fourth. That's the fourth element of the Haggadah. We have our three purposes of the Haggadah, and then to respond to it by feeling that gratitude. And so I'm grateful personally to have so many of our colleagues who are here today to be able to share the details of the Haggadah to make that experience so much more meaningful and enrich our experience, to have the framework and the context to understand both the trees and the forest, and so to continue with this evening's Torah learning, an opportunity I'd like to call upon Rabbi Belzon. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi Shestek. I just got a message that there is a boy, Shimon Simcha ben Pninu Yehudis, who is in need of Rachmei Shamayim, Rabbi Yudin's grandson. So Mirtz Hashem, this should be a Schus li Refua Shlema, and all the words of Torah, and maybe afterwards we can say some Tehillim for his Schus. Messages, lengthy messages, can be very hard to understand. If a person goes on and speaks for a while, it's tough to follow. I guess with that introduction, I should be very brief. But if you want to be short, concise, to the point, it just takes a few words. And that's why I was thinking about a specific individual in the Haggadah that is very short, concise, brief. Almost we don't understand even what he's saying. You know, you picture the Tom, that innocent, pure boy, that boy that we all connect to, Bnei Yisrael, Ish Tam Yoyshe Vahalim, that Tam, that pure, innocent boy. And what does the Haggadah mention? What his question is? Sounds like an Israeli that has cold food given to him in a restaurant. Mazeh! What is this? Complaining. That's all the Haggadah says. Mazeh! And you know, usually we read the Haggadah, and until this dawned on me, I usually understand that he's just asking, what, Mazeh, what's this, pointing, I don't get it, what's going on? But that's not what the Haggadah says. In those two words, he says, Mazos. And I was thinking, perhaps, the Tam, that child in that brief statement, is saying something very deep. He's speaking about the experience tonight. This experience is like no other experience that I have any other night of the year. This experience is a zos. It's an experience of clarity. The Beis Halevi tells us that wherever in the Torah, wherever Chazal point out that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to give us a vivid image, wanted to explain things clearly, like we just learned a few days ago in Parshas HaChodesh. What did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu? Kazer ra'ei v'kadesh. Zos. Look at this. And Rashi says, he was mare be'etzba. He pointed to the moon. It was so clear. It was kazos. Everything made sense. That's perhaps what the Tam is saying. Sometimes life, being a Jew, is so unclear. We have so many questions. We don't understand. We don't even know why we're practicing all these practices. But then this child, this Tom, this pure, innocent boy, that is Tom that just wants to connect, and he has nothing else polluting his mind. He turns to his father and he says, Mazos, why is it that tonight everything is Zos, is so clear? The Pasuk says, Ishbar lo yeda, uksil lo yavin ezos. The fool, the one who wastes his time, the one who always gets distracted, won't have that Zos, won't have that clear experience, won't have that life of connection of Zos. The Yismach Yisrael writes in his Perushim in Chanukah that after the whole Yontif of Chanukah, you have this same revelation. Zos Chanukah. Things, after illuminating the lights for so long, things start to become clear. So this child takes that experience and sees it in Leil HaSeder and he says, this is something that I could point to. This is something that I could relate to. Why is it that tonight I could say Zos? Bizos Yovo Aaron El HaKodesh, the way Aaron the Kohen Gadol walked into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is something that I am experiencing right now. And we turn to the child and we say very simply, because again, we don't want to compete, like Rabbi Shestak said, nor do we want to lose the message and say, tremendous Shtiklach Torah. Anyone who knows me knows that I have an affinity towards tremendous Shtiklach Torah and to big varts, but not on Leil HaSeder. Leil HaSeder is a time to be mazos, to understand what it means to be a Jew, to connect like the Tam, and to answer very simply to this child. You know why you're feeling like this? Ki biyad chazaka hotzi Hashem oscha mi'eretz Mitzrayim. Because this is the anniversary of our connection to God. Because the lights of tonight are like no other. And now you have no distractions. And this is what it means to be a Jew. And tonight is a night that should spill over into the rest of your life and your experiences of being Jewish. Bizos, you should stay clear. Don't be a ksuyo. Don't be foolish. Hold on to tonight, just like it started many years ago, and we had this bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is what it means to be Jewish, and that should flow into the future of your experience in Am Yisrael and as a Jewish boy. Ma Zos.
So two rabbis spoke before me with beautiful wisdom. Rabbi Shestak asked, why are we doing this? And it got me thinking. And Rabbi Belazon said, we need to be brief, so I'll try to keep with that as well. What are we doing here? It's a good question. Why are we here? It's Erev Pesach. We got things to do. It's late in the evening. We got minyan to do. We got spouses at home, kids to put to sleep. Why are we here? To gather some Divrei Torah for the Seder? You can go on Chabad.org, on Ish.com, and this one, you can get Divrei Torah anywhere. Jewish books are a dime a dozen today. You don't even have to buy them. You can see them online. You can go to HebrewBooks.com, find Vertlach. The kids bring home hundreds of them, hundreds of Divrei Torah. Do we really need more Divrei Torah? Is that what we're here about? I'll tell you why we're here. In the Haggadah it says, Shlei Echot Bilvod Omad Aleinu L'chaleisenu. Let's listen to those words. Let's think about those words. Shelei Echot Bilvad. Because we, for the single reason that we were not Echot, Omad Aleinu L'chaleisenu, did they rise up against us to destroy us. We can have plenty of Divrei Torah by ourselves. But this idea of every year, the greater Fairlawn Jewish community getting together, different rabbis, different perspectives. We all come in and respectfully share ideas. This is the message of Pesach. This is why we're here at the Pesach Seder. You think about it. We got the Chochem and the Rosh sitting together. What are you sitting them together for? Put them on the opposite sides. No, put them together. The Tom, the Sheni Yedei Elishol. I grew up in a house where my father or mother every year made sure to invite people, but amongst the people, at least one Meshuggahner. We used to joke in my house, if you look around and everybody's normal at the Seder, guess what? You're the Meshuggahner. What this means is, the idea was, simply put, to have Mikol Katzvi from all factions and all types and all styles of Yidden sitting at a table, ki ish echad b'lev echad, one family, and we have a Seder. When we went out of Mitzrayim, it was all of us with all sorts of personalities. We all got together in unity. And so that's what we're doing here. The Divrei Torah, of course, are very important, but the most important fact is that we're here together as a community.
No, this is not a Shabbos HaGoldo Drasha, for those of you who are looking at my handout. I'd like to address and explore two key components of the Seder, which ostensibly seem to be trivial details, but in truth, they really capture the essence of what Pesach is all about. We, of course, know that on Pesach we have an obligation, as text number one tells us, Be'erev Teich L'Matzos, we are obligated to eat matzah. And how many matzahs are we supposed to eat? Says the Shulchan Aruch and Ois Beis. Gimel matzahs. There are three matzahs that we're supposed to eat. Why do we eat three matzahs? Well, halachically, from a halachic perspective, the reason why we have three matzahs is because, really, there should really only be two. Because, in general, on Yom Tov, we're meant to have Lechem Mishnah, and the Torah tells us that we're supposed to have Lechem Oini, bread of affliction, so there's supposed to be some reduction in one of those two Lecha Mishnah. So really, we would be left with one and a half. However, other opinions are to tell us that no, in fact, you're supposed to have Lecha Mishnah, two whole breads, and in addition to that, we're supposed to have an additional half, additional part of a matzah. And that's really what text number three is telling us, that there are two different opinions. So in order to accommodate both views, we have three matzahs. Now, how many cups of wine are we supposed to drink by the Seder? So the Rambam tells us in number four, Arba koises shel yayin, ein pechsin mehem, we can't have any less than four. There has to be at least four. What's the reason for the four koises? So the Yerushalmi, the Talmud Yerushalmi tells us, Minayin l'arba koises, it tells us that there are four expressions of redemption that appear in the Torah. It says in the Pasuk, Vaitzesi, Vaitzalti, Vaga'alti, Vaga'achti, there are four expressions of Geula, and that's parallel to that, that's why we have the four different cups of wine that we drink by the Seder. Now the question we need to ask is, if we take a look at the text of the Haggadah, the Haggadah itself tells us that the reason why we eat matzah is also in order to remember the fact that Hashem took us out, Hashem redeemed us. So what's exactly the difference between having four cups of wine, which are supposed to remind us of the four expressions of redemption, and the matzah? Matzah, we have three. Koises, we have four. Cups of wine, we have four. Why? And as this is in fact a question that was asked how many hundreds of years ago by one of the Rishonim, one of the medieval scholars in number seven, Vikosha says, the Mordechai, Dimkein Liboy Arbal Chamim, we should have four matzahs. If it's all about remembering the redemption and the fact that there are four expressions of redemption, so let's have four matzahs. Why not? So, I'd like to delve into the numbers 3 and 4 for just a moment. In Judaism, we know that numbers are not just numbers, but numbers are letters. Numbers are also words, because Aleph, for example, is a whole word. Aleph, Lamed, Fe. And Beis Yitzhak, there's a word associated with that number. So it's not just a number, it's also a word, it's also a shape. And the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Dalad Amud Aleph, in number Ches here, tells us Aleph stands for Aleph Bina. Aleph Beis is Aleph Bina, teach wisdom. Gimel Dalad, Gemoyl Dalim. Gemoyl Dalim means to convey, to give over, to reward, to grant to Dalim, those who are destitute. So the Gimel, in fact, in its shape, also represents that, and that's why the front leg is protruding outwards. The Dalet has this little kepala in the back that's ready to receive. And the letters themselves convey this idea. So 3 represents this idea of giving, of granting, of rewarding. And Dalet represents receiving. Now, this notion of giving is connected to 3, and the notion of receiving is connected to 4. Where do we see this? In a beautiful model that we find, as it is explained in Chassidus, and we see this in text number 9, I have it here translated for you in English. Let's read it together. The well-known analogy for this is the transmission of a concept or a thought from a great master to a humble student. The teacher is immeasurably greater than his student, that the student is unable to receive the concept as it exists in the broad mind of the teacher. And therefore, there are going to be 4 steps to transmitting whatever the teacher has in his or her mind to the student. And 1, the teacher must contract the idea to 1 point that is theoretically accessible to the student recipient, an abstract of everything that will be transmitted to the recipient. So what the teacher needs to do is first sit down and contract all of that great knowledge that he or she has into 1 point that conceptually can be given over at some later point to the student. That's the first step of developing what you're going to do while you convey, or in order to convey information to a student. Since this point is still in general terms, it is still beyond the comprehension of the recipient. Rather, 2, the details of the abstract point must be explicated so that they can come within the recipient's grasp. The teacher first needs to hone all of that information into 1 major point, and then figure out, okay, which details am I going to share and how am I going to share that? Now, however, all this takes place within the giver teacher, who plans out in his mind the details of this concept, like one who imagines in his mind how to bring an idea into speech or into writing. And so 3, after that is the transmission to the recipient, when the concept is delivered tersely without all the detail imagined by the teacher. So first the teacher takes all the information and puts it all together in 1 major point, what I want to convey. Then he develops or she develops what details I want to convey. How am I going to allow that 1 major point to then flow into all the rest of the information that the student needs to know? And then the teacher conveys it. That's 3. It's a 3-step process to the giving, to the rewarding, to the conveying, to the transmitting information to the student. And then, finally, the student is on the receiving end, the one who receives and absorbs the information, unpacks the information within his own mind and his own heart. And 4, and after that, is the elucidation and development of ideas within the recipient. So once the student has heard whatever the teacher is conveying, now the student can take that information and unpack it and make it meaningful to him, and give it meaning. In other words, make it something that now he could apply. And that's the reason why. That's the reason why the Talmud tells us in text number 10 that there are 3 aves, there are 3 forefathers and 4 matriarchs, 4 imohis, because the imohis are the Mikablim, the receivers. The Ovis are the Mashpiim, the ones who give. So it's not just because Lavan tricked Yaakov, that's how we ended up with 4 Imois, but in fact, the 4 Imois themselves contain within themselves, they represent the whole function of being a Ima, being a mother. They're the ones who receive and develop the idea that's conveyed by the Ovis, by the forefathers. Now, taking all of this to Yetzias Mitzrayim, we know, Farshim tell us, and it's here in number 11, that the Jewish people, when they were in Egypt, they had sunk to the lowest levels of depravity, of moral depravity.
What happened? Hashem takes us out of Mitzrayim, but he takes us out in haste. We don't have time to bake bread. Matzah represents that haste. Matzah represents Hashem's intervention in those circumstances, taking us out, extracting us, pulling us out of the context of Egypt and saying, okay, now we're going to save you. Now you're going to be my people. That's all the three. That's all the gimel. That's all Hashem conveying to us, giving us our identity. But then it remains meaningful for a very short period of time. After that, we need to develop it on our own. There was this whole period of Sfiras HaOmer, counting the Omer after the Geula, where we made that experience something that we internally appreciated. We developed it. It's like the difference between Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, and the oral tradition. The written Torah is God giving it to us. Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition, is the sages using the rules that God has conveyed to us and how to unpack the Torah and now make it meaningful, apply it in real life. That's Torah Shebaal Peh. And so, this is the difference between the matzah and the wine. Why is matzah number three? Why do we have three matzahs? Because matzah represents Hashem's intervention. That's God giving to us. Wine has a taste. Wine is something that we develop an internal appreciation for the experience. And that's number four. That is represented by the Dalid, by the Dal, by the one who is destitute, meaning we were in Mitzrayim and we now had received this Hashpa from Hashem, and now we need to make it something that's internal, something that's meaningful to us. And so, Torah has both aspects. Has the giving of Hashem. Hashem gave us Torah Shebiksav, the written Torah, and then we take that Torah Shebiksav and we develop it on our own. We give it meaning and we give it taste. And so in terms of our relationship with Hashem that we experience on the night of the Seder, the purpose and the message of both the matzah and the wine is that we take this experience we had, this awesome experience that we had of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and we make it something that's meaningful to us. We develop a taste for it. It's not just something that remains stale, as was mentioned earlier, but now we attribute to it meaning and flavor. It has a taste now. It's wine. And that's represented by the Dalet, by the four choices.
Good evening, Bishus Rabbi Shestak and all of my Chaverim. Bishus, everybody here. I have to just also reiterate how beautiful this is to come together. Really, that we were Yotzei Pesach by coming together, Baguda Achas, really one joined, united fair lawn. And that we're Yotzei, and the Torah is just the icing on the cake. The way I like to run my Seder is it's less about the answers and more about the questions. It's more about the discussion and less about the canned, pre-prepared Divrei Torah that my kids, Baruch Hashem, and all of our children work really hard on, but I try to use that at a different point during the Yontif. At the lunches, there's plenty of points to say Divrei Torah, but to say to try to create this open discussion about a Kaddish Baruch Hu, about Yitzias Mitzrayim, what we went through, and also move beyond the history of Mitzrayim. You know, one time I had, or several times, I had, you know, several Russian Jews at my Seder, and I said to them, please tell us what happened at your Seder. From some years where Yitzchak and my grandfather over at our Sedarim, please tell us, you survived the Holocaust. This is not just a blueprint for the survival of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, but it's a blueprint for survival of Am Yisrael throughout the generations. What I want to point your attention today is Avadim Hayinu. Right after Man Hashanah, we ask the question, right? Why is this different? Why is this night different than all the other nights? And the first answer we give is Avadim Hayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim. Now, what do we say here? We say Kadosh Baruch Hu took us out, and if God didn't take us out of Egypt, Hari Anu Uvanenu Uvenei Vanenu Mishubadim Hayinu Lefar B'Mitzrayim. If God didn't take us out of Egypt, our children and our grandchildren would still be enslaved to Paro in Egypt. And the question itself is obvious. Is that really so? Like, is this like hyperbole? Like, we would be enslaved until today, 2019, 5779, we'd still be in Egypt if God didn't intervene and take us out with the 10 Makos? That sounds crazy. That sounds crazy. So that question within itself is enough to elicit a discussion. Share that question. What do you think? Maybe you heard a nice idea. Maybe there's something further. I'd like to share with you two different thoughts on this. One comes from the Haggadah Maisa Hashem from Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, who also has a parish on Miguel's Esther / Rav Dessler. They say it's a very similar idea. Rav Dessler writes this in Michtav Me'el Yahu. They say, Meshubad here doesn't necessarily mean we would literally be enslaved, but we would be beholden to Paro. If God didn't intervene in Mitzrayim and bring the 10 Makos and persecute the Egyptians and we would eventually leave, what would happen? Maybe we would leave, maybe we would stay, maybe some of us would go, some of us would stay, but forever we would be beholden to the Egyptians for the home and that they took care of us. And they housed us in a country for so many years that we would be makir tov to them and we would still stay connected to them. There'd be a yachas to them. But what does the Kadosh Baruch Hu do? He makes it supernatural. He removes us in such a supernatural way that we know this had nothing to do with the Egyptians at all and was completely a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, removing that connection, any possible Hakara Satov we should have to the Egyptians. That's answer number one. That's why we would have been Meshubad. We would be beholden to them. But we're not because God took us out with all these amazing miracles. Answer number two comes from the Nitziv. Rabbi Natali Svi Yehuda Berlin, in his parish, his Haggadah is called Imre Shefer. And this he says, this is like if he didn't say this, we couldn't say this on our own. He says, the question is in fact true. That if God didn't intervene and take us out of Egypt, we would still be there today. He writes, Egypt would still be a superpower today. Egypt back then was the most technologically and culturally advanced nation. Now, they're a regular nation. But they would, if God didn't intervene, they would still be that way and we would still be there. Why is that? He writes, God moves mountains. God moves countries. Why? All for the Jewish people. All of history has changed for the sake of Klal Yisrael. And he writes, you see that all over history. And he sees the Jews moving from country to country and things that happen in the background are all tied to Am Yisrael fulfilling its manifest destiny in this world. And if God didn't take us out, if we weren't this Am HaNivchar, we weren't chosen, then there would be no purpose to maneuver the countries and to change world history. Everything would just stay status quo. And I think this answer is very important for us in 2019. We live in a country that's mainly ahistoric. If you think about America and the holidays, secular holidays that America has, there's very little history, and maybe there should be. Think about Memorial Day. Memorial Day here versus Yom HaZikaron in Eretz Yisrael. Yom HaZikaron is a very somber and serious day. Memorial Day is a day for barbecues and sales. Sometimes we connect the culture that we're in, and we don't think about and connect to our history. Where do I stand in the context, not just of Klal Yisrael right now, what impact are they going to make, but where do we stand in the context of Jewish history? Where are we? And I think this night, this is an important message to share with our children and with all the people that are sitting at our Seder table.
Rabbi Newborn and Rabbi Marcos both spoke about the fact that was the Kiyum of Pesach, we can all go home. But the truth is, where in the Seder, in the Haggadah, do we have a Kiyum of Pesach? What's going on right now? Who can tell me? All the different communities coming together, gathering together. So right after Avadim Hayinu, the Baal Haggadah tells us, Ma'isib Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Tarfon, Shayim Yisubim b'Bnei Brak. All the rabbis of various communities got together to have their Seder together. So if I'm the last speaker, so I guess it's up to me to get us to go through the rest of the night. So it's up to you to tell me when it's time to be done, because we want to go home. If Rabbi Yudin comes, I'll be happy to let him finish off. But this story is unique in a number of ways. The Aruch HaShulchan in his Haggadah Leil Shemurim famously points out that of these great Tanaim, we know from other episodes in the Gemara that they didn't actually live in Bnei Brak. Only Rabbi Akiva lived in Bnei Brak. We have rayas that different Tanaim lived in Lod and different places throughout Eretz Yisrael. So question number one is, why did all of these Tanayim, these Rosh Hashiva, these rabbis, leave their communities to go have Seder together in Bnei Brak? The Aruch HaShulchan also asks, famously, that we also know that Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Elazar were the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva. So if you're going to go to pick one rabbi shul to go to, you would think that the Talmud should go to the Rebbe's house. Why did the Rebbeim amongst the group go to the Talmud's house, to Rabbi Akiva's house? These are the questions which the Aruch HaShulchan in his Haggadah Leil Shemurim points out. So the Aruch HaShulchan suggests as an answer that you have to understand the historical context in which this Seder took place. He explains that these Tanaim lived at the turning points. They lived through Bayis Rishon and through the destruction of the Temple. Sorry, Bayis Sheni. So through the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And it was what was going on at the time where the Gedolim were despondent. They were wondering what's going to be with the future of Klal Yisrael. How are we going to survive the Gullus? So who do they go to? They went to Rabbi Akiva because based on the Gemara, the end of Makos, the famous Gemara that the same individuals, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Akiva, were walking on through the streets of Yerushalayim and on Har HaBayis, and they see a shual, they see a fox going through, and the Tanaim start to cry, and Rabbi Akiva starts to laugh. And the Tanaim say, why are you laughing? It's such a sad moment to see a fox and how desolate the Makom HaMikdash is. And Rabbi Akiva famously says, essentially, I'm laughing because if I know that the prophecy that came true, that there's going to be a destruction, I also know the prophecies that there's going to be a rebuilding and the streets of Yerushalayim are going to be filled with life and with Jewish life. So I know that will also come true. The famous Gemara ends by saying, Akiva nichamtanu, Akiva nichamtanu, that Rabbi Akiva was able to give nechama. So Aruch HaShulchan says that why did the Rebbeim go to the Talmud? Because for this Mida, Rabbi Akiva represents hope. Rabbi Akiva represents optimism in times where things look bleak. And that's why the Rebbeim would have left their communities in order to go specifically have the Seder together with Rabbi Akiva. So that might explain the beginning of the paragraph. But then how do we understand the end of the paragraph? The end of the paragraph says that the rabbis were all night talking about what's going to be. So this is a derech drash. It's not a pshat at all, but a beautiful suggestion, a homiletic suggestion, shared. I heard it from Rabbi Matenki of Chicago, and he shared in the name of Rabbi Joseph Baumel, who, for those who are into drash, Rabbi Lamb, in his famous article called An Unrepentant Darshan, attributes his homiletic approach to three Josephs. Rabbi Joseph Lukstein, the Rav, Rabbi Yosef Yosher Ber Soloveitchik, and Rabbi Joseph Baumel was probably the lesser known of these three rabbis. Rabbi Joseph Baumel suggests that what is the end, first of all, what is the idea that Talmidim came and had to wake up their rabbis and say, Rabbanim, it's time to go to Shacharis? The rabbis didn't have windows, the rabbis didn't have Maizmanim, they didn't know what time it was to get up and go to Shacharis. So Rabbi Baumel says, if you if you put the commas in different places, the entire meaning of the end of the paragraph has a whole different connotation. Typically, we read the story as Ad Shabal Tamidim Va'amru Lahem, until Tamidim came and said to the Rebbeim, Rabbi Seinu Giyazman Kriya Shema Shal Shachris. That's how we typically read it. It's time to daven Shachris. Rabbamo suggests if you put the comma in two changes. He says, Hayim Sap Mitzvah Shayim Kol Oso, lie there talking all that night, Ad Shabal Tamidim, comma. Until they saw in the wee hours of the night, the Talmidim were still coming. The Talmidim were still coming, and the whole night they were wondering what's going to be with Klal Yisrael, and they saw the Talmidim at 5:30 in the morning, by Neitzachama, the Talmidim are still coming to learn more. The Amru Lahem Rabbi Seinu, the rabbi said to the Talmidim, Higiyaz Ma Kriya Shema Shel Shachris. When is Ma Kriya Shema Shel Shachris? That's when it's daybreak. That's when there's the first initial rays of light of morning. It's symbolic, Rabbi Baumel says, of the fact that it gave the Rebbeim, the teachers, gave them chizik knowing the Talmidim are still coming, we're going to be okay. Zman Shel Shachris, we see the or, we see the light. I thought it's such a beautiful idea, Derech Josh, and has so many implications for what we're doing right now. First of all, the fact that I couldn't get a parking spot. Every single slot is taken. I was debating, can you park in the handicapped spots? I don't know if the cops come back here. I don't know. But just the fact that such a nice, august assembly right here speaks to the fact that I get chizuk seeing how many people came out tonight to learn about the Agada, to try the Bachanos for their Seder. I think it gives all of my colleagues and friends chizuk as well to see that people care. People want to learn. People are interested in learning. And that itself is a nechama to everyone and reflects really the nature of our community. On a second level, I think it also is something important as a hashkafa to keep in mind for the Seder. As much as we're all trying to get the best vortlach, and we want to have so much prepares, right? Belzon was saying, and Mahalchim and Shtuklach, in the end of the day, we have to remember who is the most important focus of the Seder. I'm sure like many of you, you've come with lots of dreams and ideas of what your Seder is going to look like. At the end of the day, the kids are the focus. And whatever the kids want to do, that's what's going to dictate what's going to happen. So perhaps, again, now I'm playing off of what Rabbi Baumel said, the notion is, Ad Shabal Tamidehem. We have to remember that the Tamidehem, the children, the kids at the Seder, that's the most important audience that you need to address. And if you keep in mind that it's the children, that engaging them, whatever that means, if it means dancing around the table, if it means playing games, it means throwing candies, whatever, however that looks in your family, if it's not a focus just on Vortlach and Halacha and whatever it is, if it's more focused on the children, that is the real focus of the Seder, trying to engage the children, because at the end of the day, the Leil Seder is a night of Mesorah, and if there's any night that has the potential to carry on the Mesorah, it's Leil Seder. We should keep the focus that it's the Talmidim, it's the children who are the focus of all of our efforts that we're going to do, and not be frustrated if we don't get to go through all the vorts we want to do. Okay, no one's told me I have to stop, but I don't really have too much more to get us through the rest of the night, so I think we're okay.
Before we go, as a moment of tefillah for Shimon Simcha Ben Klina Yehudis, if everyone could please rise and we'll say Kumis Morim of Tehillim Kuf Chaf Aleph and Kuf Lamed. Then you should Amir Tzashem have a Refuah Shalema very soon.